Previously on Everything is Alive.
My name is Chioki, and I am a grain of sand. I think normally I would just say we are sand. You say of yourself that you're a person.
Yeah, I would say I am a person.
Like, why aren't you a grain of person? It just seems to me like if you recognize the degree to which you owed your existence to other people, you might also be nicer to other people.
Well, Chioki, it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, a lot of things have changed since we last spoke.
Yeah, why don't you tell us what's changed?
Well, I am now a pane of glass.
I mean, this is something I guess I've always known, that glass is made from sand.
Yeah.
But it's the process, what was it like?
Well, let me tell you, the process involves a lot of heat. It's quite something. Imagine heat that you can't tell if it's coming from outside of you or within you. And then the feeling of having a form, small, simple though it may be, and having that form melt away. I became extended.
Did you understand what was happening, or was it like, what's going on here?
Well, I knew of the process. I knew that this was a thing that happened. I was, after all, originally in a fish tank. So I knew about glass. I didn't think that it was a thing that would happen to me.
Yeah. Well, for people that can't see you, why don't you just describe sort of where you are and what you're doing now?
I am in the chimp enclosure at the zoo.
You are the window through which the humans look at the chimpanzees.
Yes. Humans come into a little kind of hallway viewing area, and they sit and they watch the chimpanzees, who are also sitting and watching the humans.
Is it like that? Is it equally entertaining for the humans and the chimpanzees?
I think that the humans are definitely entertained. I think that the chimps are perhaps, I think resigned is the word.
Yeah.
It's very strange, actually. So humans come in. They come in day in and day out. They bring smaller humans. They're all having a great time looking at the chimps. And most of the time, you can always hear someone say, "Oh, they're so like us," you know? And I don't know why they're saying that exactly.
You mean you don't see that one is like the other?
Well, let me tell you, they're not so similar that you don't depend on me serving as a barrier to where they can't interact with you. They're not so similar that they are subject to the kinds of rights that might make it illegal to inter them in a zoo. So I feel like whenever humans say they're so like us, that actually humans feel a little bit of guilt or anxiety about the fact that they've constructed huge cities and have built modern technological lives. But it's hard to conclude that you are capable of a greater contentment than the chimp sitting in the sun eating a banana. I think it's just a cute and fanciful thing that they say that indicates a deep insecurity that humans have about the actual value of civilization.
Whenever I'm at the zoo, I have this thought that the worst animal at the zoo is the human being. We're judging the other animals. We're treating each other badly. Is that your experience?
I think I see what you're saying, but I guess that if that were true, then it would just be the case that the worst animal on Earth is a human being. It's not that being in the zoo somehow, you know, brings out your moral failings.
Yeah. I mean, do you think the human is the worst animal on Earth?
Well, it's hard to say. I think that we would have to establish what it was that made beings good or bad. If the thing that makes beings good or bad is pollution, genocide,
greed.
Yeah, greed, a kind of willingness to kidnap other animals for the sake of observation, war, personalized license plates that just say the name of the car again on the license plate, white supremacy. If these are the things that make a species bad, humans are bad, and furthermore, are the only bad species on the planet. So that's like kind of an accomplishment, actually.
So, Chioki, tell me about the time the bird flew into you.
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you about the first time the bird flew into me. So, in the sky one day, there were some birds kind of circling, doing their bird existence. And one bird seems to have a kind of close angle of approach. I thought, hey, if he keeps flying like this, he's not going to make that branch. But then he overshot the branch and was still headed toward me.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, well, this isn't going to be good at all. And he hit me so hard. I mean, like feathers flying everywhere. And then they, you know, how birds are. He did that thing where he fell like for a bit and then caught the wind and then kind of flew off crookedly.
Did it hurt you?
It was a feeling of impact. It was an unexpected feeling of impact. I don't know that I feel pain, but I guess that I feel enough empathy that the bird's pain was also my pain.
Yeah.
I mean, he was more surprised than I was. I obviously saw him coming the whole time, and he for sure did not see me.
How does that feel? Like that you could be mistaken for nothing?
I mean, I guess that it's a feeling of, I know something you don't know, and you're about to find out in 3, 2, that kind of thing.
But it does get to one thing now that's different. You are invisible.
I'm kind of invisible. I'm invisible in the way that for those who perceive by seeing, they can gaze through me. But I am also a wall. You know, there are all these other ways that beings perceive. Sharks can detect like electrical disturbances. Bats have sonar. They perceive a very different world. And so it can do things that you can't do. Like the bat bomb.
Sorry, did you say bat bomb?
Yeah. A bunch of flying mammals in a bomb from the Second World War. Is this not a common story?
No.
So during World War II, the U.S. military wanted to develop, for whatever reason, a bomb made of bats. They went out to bat caves with nets, and they captured like thousands of bats. And then they built a kind of bomb shell that they could put 1,000 bats inside of.
Okay.
Yeah, and so then the bats themselves had tiny explosive devices attached to them. And the idea was a plane would fly over the city and it would drop the bat bomb. And all the bats would scatter all over town and look for shelter. And then at dawn, bat boom.
I one, I just can't believe anyone thought of this, but did they ever use it? I've never heard of it.
Well, apparently in testing, the bat bomb destroyed an airplane hangar and some general's car. But then also the U.S. military developed the atomic bomb. So they didn't need the bat bomb.
So, Chiyoki, I want to get your thoughts on, there's a phrase that people use, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Does this comment assume that in a house of any other kind of construction, it's totally okay to throw a stone?
I guess.
Okay. I mean, even if you lived in a wood house, would you want to throw a stone? Like, couldn't that, like, hurt, like, a human body?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe the phrase should just be, people shouldn't throw stones.
Chiyoki, can I ask you, I've always wondered about, you know, the glass blowers. Every time I see that, I think, what if they inhaled?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that would be like. And it's something like above 3,000 degrees. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Hi, I'm calling for Gail.
Hi, you all right?
Hi, so Gail, you're a glassblower. I'm calling because I've always wanted to ask, what happens if you accidentally inhale?
Not much, to be honest. Basically, the glass it'll just collapse in on itself. The hot air that's in the point that's molten doesn't actually reach your mouth because it's too far away.
Okay.
You're just sort of shifting the air that's in the tube rather than actually what's in your lungs going through the tube itself.
And it's so much heat, too. Is there a risk of fire?
Yeah, very much so. Have you heard of Murano glass?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the island of Murano. It's in the Venetian Lagoon. At that time, around about the sort of 12th century, for some reason, the glass making was dominated by people in Venice. But like the main building material for all the buildings and the docks and things was wood. So if you've got, you know, thousands of glass workers with ovens and all this sort of stuff, it just became too much of a risk. So I think it was the government, they said, right, okay, go on this island, the island of Murano. So then if you burn down, it's fine, you're surrounded by water, we'll be okay, and then it's up to you, sort of thing. But they were regarded as really, really important people, the glassmakers, and there was something like half of the people on the island, and they were allowed certain immunity from laws, so they could wear swords and they were immune from prosecution by the state for certain things. But by the same token, they weren't allowed to leave the island because the secret of the glass that they made was so prized, it was so treasured, you know, because nobody else in the world could do it.
Wait, so there was an island of glassmakers who were both above the law and not allowed to leave ever.
Yep, that's it. I mean, some of them did manage to leave eventually, you know, and they set up in sort of England and the Netherlands and places like that. But they really risked the death penalty because...
The death penalty?
Yeah, oh yeah, some of them, they could have hands cut off if they were caught trying to leave. It was heavy duty.
Chiyoki, what's the closest you've ever come to shattering?
That would have to be my installation. I was posted in a truck with some other panes, and we were reflecting upon the strangeness of the transition. And then two workmen showed up and kind of carefully pulled me out of the truck and then began to walk me toward the place where I was to be installed. And one of the workmen who was kind of walking backward lost his footing and stumbled a bit. And there was a moment where I was in a kind of free fall. And he caught me. But in that moment, I understood the gravity of the situation with regard to me shattering. Like I understood in that moment that shattering was a possibility and that it would, if it happened, it would be the end of my existence.
Was that the first time you ever had a fear?
You know, I think so.
Oh, it's not a great feeling, right?
I would say that it's an interesting feeling in that it reveals what's at stake. The way in which I think about things now must always include the possibility of no more possibilities. This is what it's like for you, right? Like, 'cause you could die at like any moment, right?
Yep. Yeah. I could die at any moment.
Yeah.
I have to say, humans talk a lot about, you know, humans will say life is short. Life is too short. And I honestly never really felt that way until recently. I felt like it was like a good amount of time that we had on Earth. It was enough time to live a full life. And then I met my wife, and I really like her. I really like spending time with her. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, life is short, because no matter how much time we have, I will want to have more time with her.
Huh. That's interesting, because it's inevitable. And this, I think, is an interesting feature of human existence, is the inevitability of your demise. Not one of you has escaped it. Not one of you will ever escape it. And it's coming, and you also don't know when and where, and also you have all this stuff to do.
Yeah.
It's an interesting place to be, and I guess I see why you've all been so prone to making rash decisions.
Wait, what do you mean? Why do you say that would make human decisions rash?
Well, time and contemplation are two things that help decisions be good, right?
Yes.
But you're going to die. You have no time. And so it's reasonable to think that a being so constructed would just wildly thrash about in life, trying to shake off the anchor of mortality.
Yeah, I mean, given that time is a pressure on all human decisions, it's possible that no human has ever made the perfect decision. Not once in human history. Not once has a human done the right thing.
Well, I think that probably many times a human has done the right thing, but it was an accident.
So, Chioki, do you ever wish you were still sand?
I don't... Not really, no. As you know, I spent a long time being sand, and I think that this strange alchemy that has made me into what I am is a new space from which to think about the world. I think there's no good or value in desiring to go back. I do wonder, however, about the other things in nature that go through big transformations and whether they're okay with it.
Like, what do you mean?
Well, I've always wanted to ask a butterfly if actually it preferred its life as a caterpillar.
It's funny. I realize I've always just kind of thought the butterfly's sort of the better way to be, and the caterpillar's happy to get there. But I don't know that.
Yeah, it's a kind of biological imperative. They can't do anything other than transform. But I think that having to do something Doesn't that often make it suck?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that humans often paint a narrative of this beautiful metamorphosis. But what if what we're really observing is the greatest existential crisis in all of nature? I mean, I think it's at least possible that all butterflies are flapping around resenting their existence. Like, what kind of crap is this? I had a great existence sitting on leaves, munching away, and now I'm out here flapping around in this ridiculous outfit. I literally did not ask to be this way.
This is Everything is Alive. The show is produced by Jennifer Mills and me, Ian Chillog, with Eva Walchover and Isabella Kulkarni. Special thanks to Emily Spivak. We got editing help from Hillary Frank. She's the creator of The Longest Shortest Time and author of a new parenting book, Weird Parenting Wins. We're grateful to the reporting of Eric Brown, from whom we learned of the bat bomb. And a big thanks to Gail Price, the scientific glassblower at the University of Leicester, for telling us not to worry anymore about glassblowers accidentally inhaling. Chioki, the pane of glass, was played by Chioki Iansen. Everything is Alive is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. And without Julie Shapiro, executive producer, we would still be stuck in our cocoon. Music in this episode from Blue Dot Sessions. You can get in touch with us any number of ways at everythingisalive.com. We'll see you soon.
Radiotopia.